Chapter 11. A Farm is Inspected. For a moment, Bailey went cold. The positronic robot was the symbol of Spacer's superiority over Earthmen. That was weapon enough. He kept his voice steady.
It's an economic weapon. Solaria is important to the other outer worlds as a source of advanced models, and so it will not be harmed by them.
That's an obvious point, said Quemot indifferently. That helped us establish our independence. What I have in mind is something else, something more subtle and more cosmic. Quemot's eyes were fixed on his fingers' ends, and his mind was obviously fixed on abstractions.
Bailey said, Is this another of your sociological theories?
Quemot's poorly suppressed look of pride all but forced a short smile out of the Earthman.
The sociologist said, It is indeed mine. Original, as far as I know, and yet obvious if population data on the outer worlds is carefully studied. To begin with, ever since the positronic robot was invented, it has been used more and more intensively everywhere.
Not on Earth, said Bailey.
Now, now, plainclothesman. I don't know much of your Earth, but I know enough to know that robots are entering your economy. You people live in large cities and leave most of your planetary surface unoccupied. Who runs your farms and mines, then?
Robots, admitted Bailey. But if it comes to that, Dr. Earthman invented the positronic robot in the first place.
They did? Are you sure?
You can check, it's true.
Interesting. Yet robots made the least headway there.
The sociologist said thoughtfully,
Perhaps that is because of Earth's large population. It would take that much longer, yes. Still, you have robots even in your cities.
Yes, said Bailey.
More now than, say, 50 years ago.
Bailey nodded impatiently.
Yes.
Then it fits. The difference is only one of time. Robots tend to displace human labor. The robot economy moves in only one direction. More robots and fewer humans. I've studied population data very carefully, and I've plotted it and made a few extrapolations.
He paused in sudden surprise.
Why, that's rather an application of mathematics to sociology, isn't it?
It is, said Bailey.
There may be something to it at that. I will have to give the matter thought. In any case, these are the conclusions I have come to, and I am convinced there is no doubt as to their correctness. The robot-human ratio in any economy that has accepted robot labor tends continuously to increase, despite any laws that are passed to prevent it. The increase is slowed, but never stopped. At first, the human population increases, but the robot population increases much more quickly. Then, after a certain critical point is reached,
Quemot stopped again, then said,
Now let's see. I wonder if the critical point could be determined exactly, if you could really put a figure to it. There's your mathematics again.
Bailey stirred restlessly.
What happens after the critical point is reached, Dr. Quemot?
Oh, the human population begins actually to decline. A planet approaches a true social stability. Aurora will have to. Even your Earth will have to. Earth may take a few more centuries, but it is inevitable.
What do you mean by social stability?
The situation here, in Solaria. A world in which the humans are the leisure class only. So there is no reason to fear the other outer worlds. We need only wait a century, perhaps, and they shall all be Solarias. I suppose that will be the end of human history, in a way. At least, its fulfillment. Finally. Finally, all men will have all they can need and want. You know, there is a phrase I once picked up. I don't know where it comes from. Something about the pursuit of happiness.
Bailey said thoughtfully.
All men are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. Among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
You've hit it! Where's that from?
Some old document, said Bailey.
Do you see how that is changed here on Solaria, and eventually in all the galaxy? The pursuit will be over. The rights mankind will be heir to will be life, liberty, and happiness. Just that. Happiness.
Bailey said dryly,
Maybe so, but a man has been killed on your Solaria, and another may yet die. He felt regret almost the moment he spoke, for the expression on Quemot's face was as though he had been struck with an open palm. The old man's head bowed. He said, without looking up,
"I have answered your questions as well as I could. Is there anything else you wish?"
"I have enough. Thank you, sir. I am sorry to have intruded on your grief at your friend's death."
Quemot looked up slowly. "It will be hard to find another chess partner. He kept our appointments most punctually, and he played an extraordinarily even game. He was a good Salarian."
"I understand," said Bailey softly. "May I have your permission to use your viewer to make contact with the next person I must see?"
"Of course," said Quemot. "My robots are yours. And now I will leave you. Done viewing."
A robot was at Bailey's side within 30 seconds of Quemot's disappearance, and Bailey wondered once again how these creatures were managed. He had seen Quemot's fingers move toward a contact as he had left, and that was all. Perhaps the signal was quite a generalized one, saying only, "Do your duty." Perhaps robots listened to all that went on and were always aware of what a human might desire at any given moment, and if the particular robot was not designed for a particular job in either mind or body, the radio web that united all robots went into action, and the correct robot was spurred into action. For a moment, Bailey had the vision of Salaria as a robotic net with holes that were small and continually growing smaller, with every human being caught neatly in place. He thought of Quemot's picture of worlds turning into Salarias, of nets forming and tightening even on Earth until... His thoughts were disrupted as the robot who had entered spoke with the quiet and even respect of the machine.
"I am ready to help you, Master," Bailey said.
"Do you know how to reach the place where Rykane Delmar once worked?"
"Yes, Master."
Bailey shrugged. He would never teach himself to avoid asking useless questions. The robots knew, period. It occurred to him that, to handle robots with true efficiency, one must needs be expert, a sort of roboticist. How well did the average Salarian do, he wondered? Probably only so-so. He said, "Get Delmar's place and contact his assistant. If the assistant is not there, locate him wherever he is."
"Yes, Master."
As the robot turned to go, Bailey called after it, "Wait, what time is it at the Delmar workplace?"
"About 06:30, Master."
"In the morning?"
"Yes, Master."
Again, Bailey felt annoyance at a world that made itself victim of the coming and going of a sun. It was what came of living on bare planetary surface. He thought fugitively of Earth, then tore his mind away. While he kept firmly to the matter in hand, he managed well. Slipping into homesickness would ruin him. He said, "Call the assistant anyway, boy, and tell him it's government business, and have one of the other boys bring something to eat. A sandwich and a glass of milk will do." He chewed thoughtfully at the sandwich, which contained a kind of smoked meat, and with half his mind thought that Daniil Oliva would certainly consider every article of food suspect after what had happened to Gruer. And Daniil might be right, too. He finished the sandwich without ill effects, however, immediate ill effects at any rate, and sipped at the milk. He had not learned from Quemot what he had come to learn, but he had learned something. As he sorted it out in his mind, it seemed he had learned a good deal. Little about the murder, to be sure, but more about the larger matter. The robot returned.
"The assistant will accept contact, Master."
"Good. Was there any trouble about it?"
"The assistant was asleep, Master."
"Awake now, though?"
"Yes, Master."
The assistant was facing him suddenly, sitting up in bed and wearing an expression of sullen resentment. Bailey reared back as though a force barrier had been raised before him without warning. Once again, a piece of vital information had been withheld from him. Once again, he had not asked the right questions. No one had thought to tell him that Rykane Delmar's assistant was a woman.
Her hair was a trifle darker than ordinary spacer bronze, and there was a quantity of it, at the moment in disorder. Her face was oval, her nose a trifle bulbous, and her chin large. She scratched slowly at her side just above the waist, and Bailey hoped the sheet would remain in position. He remembered Gladiah's free attitude toward what was permitted while viewing. Bailey felt a sardonic amusement at his own disillusion at that moment. Earthmen assumed, somehow, that all spacer women were beautiful, and certainly Gladiah had reinforced that assumption. This one, though, was plain even by earthly standards. It therefore surprised Bailey that he found her contralto attractive when she said,
"See here, do you know what time it is?"
"I do," said Bailey. "But since I will be seeing you, I felt I should warn you."
"Seeing me? Skies above!"
Her eyes grew wide, and she put a hand to her chin. She wore a ring on one finger, the first item of personal adornment Bailey had yet seen on Solaria.
"Wait, you're not my new assistant, are you?"
"No, nothing like that. I'm here to investigate the death of Rykane Delmar."
"Oh? Well, investigate, then."
"What is your name?"
"Clarissa Cantoro."
"And how long have you been working with Dr. Delmar?"
3 years."
"I assume you're now at the place of business."
Bailey felt uncomfortable at that noncommittal phrase, but he did not know what to call a place where a fetal engineer worked.
"If you mean, am I at the farm," said Clarissa discontentedly, "I certainly am. I haven't left it since the old man was done in, and I won't leave, it looks like, till an assistant is assigned me. Can you arrange that, by the way?"
"I'm sorry, ma'am, I have no influence with anyone here."
"Thought I'd ask."
Clarissa pulled off the sheet and climbed out of bed without any self-consciousness. She was wearing a one-piece sleeping suit, and her hand went to the notch of the seam where it ended at the neck. Bailey said hurriedly,
"Just one moment. If you'll agree to see me, that will end my business with you for now, and you may dress in privacy."
"In privacy?"
She put out her lower lip and stared at Bailey curiously.
"You're finicky, aren't you? Like the boss."
"Will you see me? I would like to look over the farm."
"I don't get this business about seeing, but if you want to view the farm, I'll tour you. If you'll give me a chance to wash and take care of a few things and wake up a little, I'll enjoy the break in routine."
"I don't want to view anything. I want to see."
The woman cocked her head to one side, and her keen look had something of professional interest in it.
"Are you a pervert or something? When was the last time you underwent a gene analysis?"
"Jehoshaphat," muttered Bailey. "Look, I'm Elijah Bailey. I'm from Earth."
"From Earth?"
she cried vehemently.
"Skies above! Whatever are you doing here? Or is this some kind of complicated joke?"
"I'm not joking. I was called in to investigate Delmar's death. I'm a plainclothesman, a detective."
"You mean that kind of investigation? But I thought everyone knew his wife did it."
"No, ma'am, there's some question about it in my mind. May I have your permission to see the farm and you? As an Earthman, you understand, I'm not accustomed to viewing. It makes me uncomfortable. I have permission from the head of security to see people who might help me. I will show you the document if you wish."
"Let's see it."
Bailey held the official strip up before her imaged eyes. She shook her head.
"Seeing? It's filthy. Still, skies above, what's a little more filth than this filthy job? Look here, though, don't you come close to me. You stay a good distance away. We can shout or send messages by robot if we have to. You understand?"
"I understand."
Her sleeping suit split open at the seam just as contact broke off, and the last word he heard from her was a muttered, "Earthman."
"That's close enough," said Clarissa.
Bailey, who was some 25 feet from the woman, said,
"It's all right this distance, but I'd like to get indoors quickly."
It had not been so bad this time, somehow. He had scarcely minded the plane trip, but there was no point in overdoing it. He kept himself from yanking at his collar to allow himself to breathe more freely. Clarissa said sharply,
"What's wrong with you? You look kind of beat."
Bailey said,
I'm not used to the outdoors.
That's right, Earthman. You've got to be cooped up or something. Skies above.
Her tongue passed over her lips as though it tasted something unappetizing.
Well, come in then, but let me move out of the way first. All right, get in.
Her hair was in two thick braids that wound about her head in a complicated geometrical pattern. Bailey wondered how long it took to arrange like that, and then remembered that, in all probability, the unerring mechanical fingers of a robot did the job. The hair set off her oval face and gave it a kind of symmetry that made it pleasant, if not pretty. She did not wear any facial makeup, nor, for that matter, were her clothes meant to do more than cover her serviceably. For the most part, they were a subdued dark blue, except for her gloves, which covered her to mid-arm, and were a badly clashing lilac in color. Apparently, they were not part of her ordinary costume. Bailey noted the thickening of one finger of the gloves, owing to the presence of the ring underneath. They remained at opposite ends of the room, facing one another. Bailey said,
"You don't like this, do you, ma'am?"
Clarissa shrugged.
"Why should I like it? I'm not an animal, but I can stand it. You get pretty hardened when you deal with...
She paused, and then her chin went up as though she had made up her mind to say what she had to say without mincing.
"With children."
She pronounced the word with careful precision.
"You sound as though you don't like the job you have."
"It's an important job. It must be done. Still, I don't like it."
"Did Rykane Del Mar like it?"
"I suppose he didn't, but he never showed it. He was a good Solarian."
"And he was finicky."
Clarissa looked surprised.
Bailey said,
"You yourself said so. When we were viewing and I said you might dress in private, you said I was finicky like the boss."
"Oh, well, he was finicky. Even viewing, he never took any liberties, always proper."
"Was that unusual?"
"It shouldn't be. Ideally, you're supposed to be proper, but no one ever is, not when viewing. There's no personal presence involved, so why take any pains, you know? I don't take pains when viewing, except with the boss. You had to be formal with him."
"Did you admire Dr. Del Mar?"
"He was a good Solarian."
Bailey said,
"You've called this place a farm, and you've mentioned children. Do you bring up children here?"
"From the age of a month, every fetus on Solaria comes here."
"Fetus?"
"Yes."
She frowned.
"We get them a month after conception. Does this embarrass you?"
"No,"
Bailey said shortly.
"Can you show me around?"
"I can, but keep your distance."
Bailey's long face took on a stony grimness as he looked down the length of the long room from above. There was glass between the room and themselves. On the other side, he was sure, was perfectly controlled heat, perfectly controlled humidity, perfectly controlled asepsis. Those tanks, row on row, each contained its little creature floating in a watery fluid of precise composition, infused with a nutrient mixture of ideal proportions. Life and growth went on. Little things, some smaller than half his fist, curled on themselves with bulging skulls and tiny budding limbs and vanishing tails. Clarissa, from her position 20 feet away, said,
"How do you like it, plainclothesman?"
Bailey said,
"How many do you have?"
"As of this morning, 152. We receive 15 to 20 each month, and we graduate as many to independence."
"Is this the only such institution on the planet?"
"That's right. It's enough to keep the population steady, counting on a life expectancy of 300 years and a population of 20,000. This building is quite new. Dr. Del Mar supervised its construction and made many changes in our procedures. Our fetal death rate now is virtually zero."
Robots threaded their way among the tanks. At each tank, they stopped and checked controls in a tireless, meticulous way, looking in at the tiny embryos within.
"Who operates on the mother?" asked Bailey. "I mean, to get the little things."
"Doctors," answered Clarissa.
"Dr. Del Mar?"
"Of course not. Medical doctors. You don't think Dr. Del Mar would ever stoop to... Well, never mind."
Why can't robots be used?
Robots in surgery? First law makes that very difficult, plainclothesman. A robot might perform an appendectomy to save a human life if he knew how, but I doubt that he'd be usable after that without major repairs. Cutting human flesh would be quite a traumatic experience for a positronic brain. Human doctors can manage to get hardened to it, even to the personal presence required.
Bailey said, I notice that robots tend the fetuses, though. Do you and Dr. Del Mar ever interfere?
We have to sometimes when things go wrong. If a fetus has developmental trouble, for instance, robots can't be trusted to judge the situation accurately when human life is involved.
Bailey nodded. Too much risk of a misjudgment and a life lost, I suppose.
Not at all. Too much risk of overvaluing a life and saving one improperly.
The woman looked stern.
As fetal engineers, Bailey, we see to it that healthy children are born, healthy ones. Even the best gene analysis of parents can't assure that all gene permutations and combinations will be favorable, to say nothing of the possibility of mutations. That's our big concern, the unexpected mutation. We've got the rate of those down to less than 1 in 1,000, but that means that, on the average, once a decade, we have trouble.
She motioned him along the balcony, and he followed her. She said,
I'll show you the infants' nurseries and the youngsters' dormitories. They're much more a problem than the fetuses are. With them, we can rely on robot labor, only to a limited extent.
Why is that?
You would know, Bailey, if you ever tried to teach a robot the importance of discipline. First law makes them almost impervious to that fact. And don't think that youngsters don't learn that about as soon as they can talk. I've seen a 3-year-old holding a dozen robots motionless by yelling, You'll hurt me, I'm hurt. It takes an extremely advanced robot to understand that a child might be deliberately lying.
Could Del Mar handle the children?
Usually.
How did he do that? Did he get out among them and shake sense into them?
Dr. Del Mar? Touch them? Skies above. Of course not. But he could talk to them, and he could give a robot specific orders. I've seen him viewing a child for 15 minutes, and keeping a robot in spanking position all that time, getting it to spank, spank, spank. A few like that, and the child would risk fooling with the boss no more. And the boss was skillful enough about it so that usually the robot didn't need more than a routine readjustment afterward.
How about you? Do you get out among the children?
I'm afraid I have to sometimes. I'm not like the boss. Maybe someday I'll be able to handle the long-distance stuff. But right now, if I tried, I'd just ruin robots. There's an art to handling robots really well, you know. When I think of it, though, getting out among the children? Ugh, little animals.
She looked back at him suddenly.
I suppose you wouldn't mind seeing them.
It wouldn't bother me.
She shrugged and stared at him with amusement.
Earthman.
She walked on again.
What's all this about, anyway? You'll have to end up with Gladia Del Mar as murderess. You'll have to.
I'm not quite sure of that, said Bailey.
How could you be anything else but sure? Who else could it possibly be?
There are possibilities, ma'am.
Who, for instance?
Well, you, for instance.
And Clarissa's reaction to that quite surprised Bailey.